Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Warning. Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor saying thank you for joining me this week as I dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. Before we get started, you may notice this is a John-only episode. That is because I actually just walked in the door literally 5 minutes ago from seeing John Mayer. And if you have not seen him, please do yourself a favor. Go check it out. I do not care like what your primary genre of music that you enjoy listening to is or anything of that nature. It was an incredible show. If you are a fan of music and you just want to feel inspired and really see somebody who is a master at what they do, I would definitely recommend checking out a John Mayer show. So it was the first time Kara and I got a chance to see him. It was a mom and dad night out. And because of that, our schedules didn't really line up where Olivia could join us for this one. I didn't want her to have to stay up super late to hop on here with me and knock it out. So this week it will just be me, but this is another one of those multi-part stories. Again, seems like, you know, the listeners, the locksmiths out there, the family have really enjoyed, kind of breaking these cases up into more than one episode. And so that's what we're going to do with this one. We're going to cover the first part of this case, and then Olivia will be back with us on Thursday. We'll continue it. I'm going to be honest with you. This one might end up being a three-parter because there's a lot that goes into it. And I'll tell you, I'm very, very surprised that I had never heard of this case or run across it before. And so I'm going to be very interested to see if our listeners, again, the locksmiths, if this is a case that you're familiar with, if you are, you have any thoughts on it or anything like that, definitely feel free to drop us a line because I would love to hear what you think about this one. And if you are familiar with it, because like I said, I have not heard of it and would really like to get your input on it if it is one that you are familiar with, or maybe you're from the area or something of that nature. So because Olivia is not here with me, we will go ahead and quit the Gabby Gab because there's not really a whole lot to do. We'll jump into that stabby stabby. But I did just want to take a moment and say, I hope you're doing well. Again, thank you for joining me this week. And we'll go ahead and break down this week's story. For this week's case, we're headed to Stearns County, Minnesota. In the early morning hours of December 15th, 1978, Alice Hewling and her four children were sleeping in their home. 11-year-old Billy, 13-year-old Wayne, 12-year-old Patty, and 16-year-old Susie. At around 4 a.m., Billy was awoken by sounds coming from the kitchen. He would later describe them as muffled noises and wrestling, then what sounded like a gunshot. Billy lay in bed, frozen, as he heard the sound of footsteps creeping up the stairs. He looked up to see a man standing in his bedroom doorway. He was of medium build, less than 6 feet tall, wearing a ski mask over his head. Billy shared a bedroom with his brother Wayne, who had also heard the blast. He sat up in bed asking, "Who are you?" Then the man in the doorway responded by raising a shotgun and firing, killing 13-year-old Wayne instantly. The man then turned and walked into Susie's room, shooting the teenage girl in the head, then proceeding to do the same to 12-year-old Patty. Billy remained in bed, listening as one by one his siblings were murdered. Then the killer returned. He raised the gun and fired twice at Billy before turning to leave the home. But by some sort of miracle, the gunman had missed, and Billy was unharmed. The child remained in bed, terrified to move, and after about 10 to 15 minutes had passed and believing the killer had left the home, Billy fled, running through the Minnesota cold and snow to a neighbor's home. When police arrived, they discovered the horrific scene. They would also find that the children's mother, Alice, had been gunned down by the masked man. Investigators would find shotgun shell casings and footprints in the snow, but nothing seemed to point to who would want to commit such a brutal act of violence. Now, 4 days later, on December 19th, Wright County Deputy Sheriff Gary Miller was called to the restaurant at a local truck stop. According to the caller, a customer had been harassing a female waitress. Sheriff Miller arrived at the truck stop but decided to run the suspect's license plate before making contact, hoping to learn more about the man he was about to confront. But to Miller's surprise, the plate came back registered to a stolen vehicle. The deputy went inside and spoke with the suspect. He would later be identified as 26-year-old Joseph Turry. Turry was immediately arrested for the theft of an automobile, and the vehicle was towed back to the station, where, per policy, it would be searched and items found would be cataloged. Inside the vehicle, police found several items, including a metal bar about 32 inches in length. Additionally, a toy Batmobile car and a ski mask were found. But there was also another disturbing find, a list of women's names, written on several different types of paper, like coasters and notebook paper, all compiled within a journal. Many of them had physical descriptions written next to them, not only of the women, but also of where they lived. And it would later be determined that many of the women on that list were waitresses. Now, this made Deputy Miller perk up. The police were still searching for anyone who may have been involved in the Hewling family murders. And 16-year-old Susie Hewling had worked part-time as a waitress at a local diner. So Miller immediately passed his findings on to the detectives working the case. Turry was interviewed about the objects found in his car, and when asked about the list of names, he admitted that they were his, but insisted that it didn't mean anything. As for the Batmobile toy car, Turry first told investigators that it belonged to his grandchildren, before changing a story and saying that it belonged to his nieces and nephews. Detectives believe that Turry was a strong suspect in the Hewling family murders, but the evidence they had was circumstantial at best. So he was charged with unauthorized use of a motor vehicle and he would be released on January 4th, 1979. With Joseph Turry being the only suspect and the lack of evidence, the Hewling family murder case would eventually go cold. But it wouldn't be long until another victim would end up dead. Only 5 months later, just shy of 100 miles away, was the town of Afton, Minnesota. It was now spring, and on May 8th, Fran Wollenhouse had just finished running errands for the day. She arrived home, driving up the family's driveway at around 3:30 p.m. Her daughter, Marlis, had parked her car in the driveway. Marlis Wollenhouse was 18 years old. She was only a month away from graduating high school, and she had been working part-time as a waitress at a restaurant in the area. Fran exited her vehicle and walked inside. As she entered the home, she called out for Marlis, but there was no answer. As Fran walked through the house, she made a terrifying discovery. There, sitting upright against an antique school desk, was Marlis. She was covered in blood and appeared to have been beaten in the head. There were several star-shaped cuts on her scalp, and her skull had been fractured. Fran immediately called the police, holding her daughter in her arms until they arrived. Marlis was rushed to the hospital, but the injuries had caused uncontrollable bleeding and severe brain injury. And though emergency surgery was done, Marlis Wollenhouse would be taken off a ventilator and pass away 2 days after the attack. The Washington County Sheriff's Department would lead the investigation. And initially, they had several leads. A neighbor shared that they had seen a vehicle fishtail out of the Wollenhouse driveway at around 3:15 that afternoon. Additionally, a friend of the teenager had testified that on the night before her death, Marlis had been frightened by seeing a man sitting in the back of the restaurant where she worked. According to the witness, the man had light blonde hair, and he had been wearing sunglasses, a leather coat, and a baseball cap. Police investigated several suspects, but like the Hewling family, the murder of Marlis would go cold as well. And sadly, a killer would strike again on September 26, 1980.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In West St. Paul, 19-year-old Diane Edwards had finished her shift as a waitress at a local diner. She had cashed out her tips for the evening and left for the night, walking north along Roberts Road. Diane was only 3 blocks from home when she was approached by a brown station wagon. The car pulled up onto the sidewalk in front of her, and it was then that an unidentified man exited the driver's seat and forced the teenager into the car. Now, 4 other teenage girls would witness the abduction. They would later tell police that they had heard Diane scream before being taken. But sadly, they didn't get a good look at her kidnapper. Another woman would tell police that she had been sitting in a laundromat parking lot and had witnessed what had happened. She shared that she saw an older, rusty brown station wagon approach Diane. According to the witness, the man jumped out of the vehicle, put the teenager over his shoulder, and loaded her into the vehicle. However, she didn't contact the police until she saw Diane's disappearance in the local news the following morning. Now, strangely, another woman would come forward with a similar story. Tommy Williams told police that only a few minutes before Diane's abduction, she too had been run off the road by a brown station wagon. Tommy shared that she had stopped at a stop sign when a station wagon gently rear-ended her vehicle. When she turned around to look, she saw a man, grinning at her in quite a menacing way. The man then pulled up alongside her car and exited his vehicle, attempting to enter the locked passenger side door. Scared, Tommy made a left turn, and the unknown driver decided to pursue her, eventually speeding in front of her and blocking off the road. It was then, for her safety, that Tommy began laying on the horn violently. Luckily, another vehicle approached and it scared the man in the station wagon away. Now, because it was dark, Tommy didn't get a good look at her assailant, but she was able to describe him as being in his mid-20s, unshaven, and having hair below his ear line. Investigators worked on Diane Edwards' disappearance, but there were only a few leads, and detectives just didn't have much to go on. Then, on October 9, 1980, a hunter was out in Elk River. While walking along a country road, he came across a pair of glasses and a purse. Inside was an ID. It belonged to 19-year-old Diane Edwards. The hunter called in the discovery, and the police arrived to search the area. As officers walked through the brush on the ground, a helicopter searched from above. There, from the sky, they spotted something. The pilot radioed in to officers on the ground who rushed to the location. It was there, in a ditch off of the road, that the body of Diane Edwards was discovered, murdered by a single knife wound to the chest. Investigators were now looking for the girl's killer, and it turns out they wouldn't have to look far. In fact, only a few weeks later, the Minneapolis police would make an arrest. Now, this person had been arrested for the kidnapping and rape of another woman, seemingly unrelated to the Edwards case. The name of the man they had in custody was Joseph Turry. So we're going to go ahead and stop right there for part one. I don't want to get too far into the story until Olivia is back with us on Thursday for part two. But I did just want to take some time to share some thoughts that I had as I went through and was doing the research. And first and foremost, my heart goes out just so incredibly much to Billy Hewling. I cannot imagine what it would be like to be a child and to hear your entire family, you know, be executed. And then for someone to try to execute you, and you're the only person who survives. and the bravery that it must have taken to leave that house and go to a neighbor and let them know what happened. And not only that, but to recount that story and to tell that tale after to police and to explain what happened. And, you know, I really do hope that as he got older, Billy got the help that he needed and was able to work through that, and hopefully was still surrounded by people who loved him. And, you know, I wasn't able to find a whole lot about what had happened to him as he got older. But, you know, again, I just really hope that he had the resources that he needed and was able to navigate that the best way that you can. You know, it's just a sad story. You know, it's an entire family gone in the blink of an eye. And also, that's one of those things for me that is a huge fear. The home invasion stuff really gets under my skin. And it's just one of those things that leaves me feeling super unsettled. And so this one, you know, so far has hit me pretty hard. And then to think, you know, that there's a guy out there who is just casing these waitresses and watching what they do and is, you know, brazen enough to just pull up on a street and grab someone and throw them in a car, you know, just on a normal road, not like a secluded back road, anything like that. So, you know, this is, like I said, it's just one of these ones that really kind of gets under my skin and leaves me with the ick, you know what I mean? I don't know the best way to explain it. So I'm super excited to dive into part two once Olivia is back. But, you know, just thinking about the whole, I wonder, you know, because this was the late 70s going into the early 80s, like, was this something where they had realized that there was a pattern going on, or were we still in this situation where, you know, these police departments weren't working with each other? And so, you know, it just seems like these random things that weren't necessarily connected. But, you know, you would think with the specific group that was being targeted and the way that which it was done, like, it wouldn't be hard to, you know, say, hey, this could potentially be the same person. But again, you know, we're talking about cases that happened, you know, 100 miles away in different cities and things like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. I'm excited to go through it with you, the listeners, the locksmiths. I'm excited to go through it with Olivia. But I got to tell you, just starting off, if we're talking about deadbolt tests, simply for the Hewling home invasion and the family murder, this is a 10 for me. And again, if you're familiar with this case, you know, we would love to hear from you. Would love to hear what you think. If you have any insight on it, or again, we're in the area, anything like that, we would absolutely love to hear from you. It's very surprising, but we get a lot of people, especially through Spotify comments, strangely enough, who know something about these cases or have some kind of, you know, 7 degrees of separation connection to them. And so, again, if you know anything about it, if you're from the area and know the story, please feel free to reach out to us. Again, you can reach us in our Facebook group. It's a whole wonderful community of some amazing people. We would absolutely love to have you be part of that group if you are not already. So if you're interested in joining the Facebook group, you can use the link in the description of this episode. Come hang out with us. We'd love to have you. You can also reach out to us on Instagram at Check the Locks Pod, and we are on Twitter at Check the Lock. So again, would love to hear whatever you think about this episode. And as always, if you'd like to, you can also leave us a Spotify comment or an Apple Podcast review. The podcast reviews really do help us. Those 5 stars help us get into other shows' recommendations. They help new listeners find the show. And, you know, really, that's all we're trying to do is to grow the Check the Locks community and get in front of as many people as we can. So if you've already left us a review, thank you so much for doing that. If you haven't, again, there's a link in the description of the episode you're listening to right now. Head on over, leave that 5-star review, and let us know what you think of the show. And if you really like what we do, you want to help financially support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/checkthelocks, get signed up today. Got a lot of great tiers, exclusive benefits, stickers, coffee mugs, stuff like that. But you also get the episodes commercial free. So if you love Check the Locks, but you hate those ads, Patreon is the way to go. So again, if you like what we do, you want to help financially support us, that's patreon.com/checkthelocks, get signed up today. And if you can't financially support the show, we definitely understand. Just listening, hanging out with us, sharing what we do with your friends, your family, the people who are important to you, means just as much, if not more. So if that is you and you are getting this out there in any way you can, just know that we appreciate it so much. Again, just like those reviews, it's about that grassroots growth, bringing more people into a community. That's really what we're striving to do, is to build a community. And when you share this, that's exactly what you help us to do. So again, if you were sharing this in any way, shape, or form, just know that it really does mean the world. That's all that we have for this week's case, but please make sure that you're subscribed to Check the Locks on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. We will see you on Thursday with part two of this truly terrifying true crime case. But until then, don't forget to check those locks. Stay safe out there. We'll see you later.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.